This program is a production of WAMC News. From Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly half-hour review of New York State government and politics. Your host is political scientist and syndicated columnist Dr. Alan Shartok of the State University.
In this edition of the Legislative Gazette, we'll go outside the borders of New York State to neighboring Massachusetts and talk to Governor Michael Dukakis about some of the same issues that are being faced here in New York. This weekend, the Albany Upstate Chapter of Blacks in Government held a training session as part of its push to get more blacks employed by government. Bryn Quell discussed the issue with Vanessa Haley, a systems analyst with the State Health Department and president of the local chapter.
When you first came to the group, to Blacks in Government, do you recall what were some of the common complaints or needs that other people expressed?
Well, the most frequent concern was entry into the civil service system and being able to do an effective job, being able to perform effectively on their job.
Getting into the system, was it a matter of taking tests? I mean, it is, for most people that are familiar with it, you have to acquire a job through a test and interview. You may be on a waiting list for a long time or a short time, depending on how many jobs there are. What was the first stumbling block that people point to?
The first stumbling block that was most frequently mentioned was the entrance into the test, the fact that the job categories are narrowly defined and not as flexible as they should be, so you cannot rely on the different or varied experiences you may have. You have to meet the tight qualifications that are set for those exams. So what we're trying to do as an organization is to get people to somehow use the experiences that they have to qualify for the exams. It's just a matter of knowing how to fill out the applications.
So in part, Vanessa, what you're describing is a very practical need to know how to interpret questions and to be able to take what you've done as valuable to make you fit into the right slot.
That's it, exactly. Because there are a lot of things that are common to all jobs, and a lot of people just don't know how to move it from one position to another.
Is that a fault of the civil service system? Do you think, whether it has been conscious or not, that it has excluded blacks because of the testing program?
I would say that because the civil service doesn't do the outreach that they should be doing or can be doing, and may not be doing it because of lack of resources or lack of manpower, that many people do not know how to fill out civil service exams, mm-hmm. or even know how to approach a civil service exam.
Vanessa Haley, president of the Albany Chapter of Blacks in Government. Next Tuesday is Election Day in New York. When voters in some towns go to the polls, they will be taking part in the field test of the newest kind of voting machine. Bill Gralty spoke with Steve Lefevre of the State Elections Commission.
7 years ago, one of the makers of the present lever machines ceased producing them, and the other maker, that was Shoup out of Bron Mar, Pennsylvania. The other maker of the lever machines, AVM, automatic voting machines, ceased production 2 years ago. So we were put in the position, although they are still going to service them, they do not any longer make the machines, so we were put in the position of finding alternative voting methods. So we have did some investigation, and we came up with three manufacturers in the United States that make automatic voting machines. One is Shoup, two is Computer Election Systems out of California, and the third AVM out of Jamestown, New York. The Shoup, RF Shoup Corporation, will be doing tests in Niskayuna in the county of Schenectady, computer election systems in Monroe County, and automatic voting automatic voting equipment in the county of Tompkins. Now, the machines basically are similar to the present lever machines, the differences lie in the fact that instead of pressing a lever, you will now push a button under the name of the candidate and or the ballot issue you wish to vote for. If you don't like what you've pushed, the candidate you voted for, you just press that button again and the light will come back on and you'll select another candidate. When you're finished, you just press a little green button and the vote is automatically locked into the computer chips. Now, the benefit of using this is the fact that you'll have a printout of all results roughly 4 to 10 minutes after the election is closed instead of several days, as it takes with the previous lever machines.
Maybe you can explain to me how that the old ones worked. I mean, not pulling a lever, but in behind there. That had to be manually counted, is that
yes,
right?
Yes, all of them. And then they had all of them had to be manually counted and then brought to the Board of Elections and certified there, which usually took 7 days, where now you can do it in a matter of the whole process can be done in an hour. And one other large benefit that I think will be will show to be really excellent is the fact that it's very, very accessible for handicapped voters. And what happens is the machine will, with the help of the inspector, will be lowered, and it takes about 1 second to lower it to 3 feet, so a handicapped voter can come right in and be, without the assistance of any inspectors or outside help, will be able to personally go in themselves and make their selections for the candidates or ballots. And I think that's really excellent for the handicapped voters.
Are the machines that are being tested in the three different counties with the three different companies, are they pretty much the same?
Yeah, they're pretty much, basically they look the same. There are a few minor changes, but they do look the same, yes.
And presumably once they're tested and... then what's going to happen? We're going to see them in more places?
Well, yeah, what's going to happen after we're done testing them, the counties involved and our department, the State Board of Elections, will submit reports to the legislature, and then we would like to see legislation regarding the use of these in the foreseeable future, although, you know, obviously it's up to the legislature to work that out.
Are there any... I almost hesitate to raise the issue with you, but are they any more tamper-proof?
Yes, there is. There are 5 separate computer chips inside the machine, and they are checks for the voting. And if not one of them agree, then there is a problem, and the inspectors will have to check it out. But they've never had a problem in New Mexico, Alabama, or any other states with not one of those chips agreeing on the votes and the tabulations involved. They've never had a problem at all.
Steve Lefevre is a spokesman for the State Elections Commission. Although New York State is unique in many ways, it is also a lot like many of its neighboring states. The major policy issues are often strikingly similar. The differences often result from approaches to those problems. We in New York are quite familiar with the approaches taken by Governor Mario Cuomo. Today, though, we're going to talk to a different governor, Michael Dukakis of Massachusetts, to get some of his thoughts on those issues. Governor, good to have you on the program again.
Alan, a great pleasure to talk with you, and I hope all those good folks out in the Berkshires are listening.
Well, not only the Berkshires, Governor, but a lot of people over here in New York State. So let me ask you the first question. Are you a potential candidate for at least Vice President of the United States on some kind of national ticket?
No, I am a potential candidate for Governor of Massachusetts, and since I've not yet proven that I can get reelected for 2 terms in succession, I'm very strongly committed to trying to do that and only that.
Governor Cuomo, with a sense of humor, frequently compares Massachusetts, where I, of course, live, invidiously to the state of New York. I wondered, of course, he always qualifies that by talking about his good friend, Governor Dukakis, and his lovely wife. I wondered whether or not you had any response to any of that.
Well, I think the world of the governor of New York, and I really do. I think Mario is one of the most impressive people to come along in American political life in a long time, and I have great respect and admiration for him. Of course, I can understand why he might be a little envious of this state, given the fact that we've had the lowest unemployment rate in the country for most of this past year, and we're doing so many good things. And when we do good things, I always let him in on it so he can pick up on what we're doing. But actually, he and I and most governors believe very strongly in constructive plagiarism, and when New York does something good that we ought to learn from, we do, and when we do something good that he can build on, he does, and we have a very good relationship. And we represent and govern two states that have many of the same opportunities ahead of them and many of the same challenges.
Governor, what are you most proud of that you've done this last year or so that we could learn from in New York State?
Well, I don't know how much one state can learn from another in general terms about what's happening on the economic front, but I certainly am very pleased with the economic record we've put together in Massachusetts. It really has been extraordinary. It's the result of some very strong and aggressive economic development policies, a very progressive business community, a very progressive labor community, and at the same time, the enormous educational resources that we have here, 118 colleges and universities, and what may well be the finest education, research, and technological center in the nation. And when you put all of these things together and add to it very productive and very hardworking working people, you end up with a 3.5% unemployment rate and a great economic future ahead of you. The other aspect of that, Alan, which pleases me so much, is that it has meant that we've been able to reach out to thousands and thousands of people who have always been on the margin economically, many of them on public assistance, or at least often on public assistance, and we've put together what unquestionably is the best employment and training program for people on welfare in the country.
Well, that's very interesting. Governor Cuomo has continually made reference to the fact that most of the people who are on welfare can't really help being there, and that for the most part they are not able-bodied men, but women, but people who are really disabled. Now recently has been talking about getting some of those people back to work through his economic development plan. First of all, do you feel that that's a fair characterization, that the people who are on welfare are for the most part people who have no other choices?
No, I don't agree with that. I'm not sure, frankly, and you've been interviewing the governor, I'm not sure that's a fair characterization of what he has said or believes, Alan, though, again, you'd have to ask him. I think what he's saying is that the reason people have to go to the welfare office in many, many cases are reasons beyond their control, and I would agree with that. The question is, what happens when they get there? And are we going to develop an environment in this country where when somebody, either because she's been deserted by a husband or he's been laid off suddenly and has run out of unemployment benefits in a depressed community and simply can't find work, or somebody has a disability of some kind which makes it difficult for them to support themselves, are we going to greet them at the welfare office with a complicated, bureaucratic, here's your check and we'll see you in 2 weeks response, or are we going to greet them with a strong employment and training program which says to them, look, you count, you've got dignity, you've got skills, you've got intelligence, let us help you to make this as temporary a period for you as possible. And let us help you to find, to develop the skills and find the kind of good job with a future that will make it unnecessary for you ever to come back. And I think on that issue, Governor Cuomo and I are in total agreement. And what we've been able to do here and what he is in the process of doing in New York is exactly the direction in which this country ought to move.
Governor, how is Massachusetts handling its malpractice crisis, its insurance crisis? It's one of the big problems that New York faces. I understand that you are proposing a cap on pain and suffering and how much people can sue physicians for. Is that correct?
Well, I've done much more than that, Alan. I just submitted a very comprehensive medical malpractice proposal, which probably goes far beyond anything that's been proposed anywhere in the country. it deals with the whole issue of the discipline and the conduct of doctors, a very small minority, but a small minority that may not be practicing good medicine. It deals with insurance practices and the way the insurance industry, and in particular in this case our Joint Underwriting Association, provide insurance, what the standards are, what the rates are, what the costs are, so that we can regulate rates in a way that will provide our docs with the lowest possible rate that's consistent with good coverage. And it also deals with the whole issue of what and how we compensate the victims of malpractice. At the present time, we have a very wasteful and inefficient system in this country. Two-thirds of the dollars paid in as premiums by doctors never, ever get back to the injured victim. Never get back to the injured victim. And that's really outrageous. I don't know of a health insurance system in the country that could possibly survive with those kinds of numbers. Compare, for example, what happens in Blue Cross and Blue Shield, at least in this state, where 93 to 94 cents of every premium dollar actually gets back in the form of benefits.
So who's the big culprit there, Governor?
Well, I don't know that there are any villains here. We've got lawyers who are out fighting for their clients because they believe that their clients have been injured, and in many cases they have. We have doctors who are trying to practice good medicine, particularly in a state like this, which has an international reputation for the quality of its medicine, who are finding it increasingly difficult not just to pay the premiums, but to practice in an environment where you never know whether or not your patient's going to sue you.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a public which is entitled to the very best health care we can provide them at the lowest possible cost, and yet when something does happen, unfortunate though it may be as a result of medical malpractice, is entitled to fair compensation.
Well, you're pretty nice to the lawyers, but I think that
they're... Well, it's not a question of being nice to them. You know, I'm a lawyer myself, but I'm a son of a doctor, which an interesting background. Look, lawyers are fighting for their clients.
But they're also taking a third, Governor, sometimes, a huge chunk of somebody's
income. Yeah, but these are contingent fees. They don't get anything if they lose. You may or may not like the contingent fee system, but as long as we have it, that's what's going to happen. And what we're proposing is some reasonable limit on so-called non-economic damages, that is, damages other than medical expenses, lost wages, and lost earning capacity. And we've proposed that that be at $500,000, which I think is a fairly generous amount. And we're also proposing, Alan, an entirely new system for obstetricians and gynecologists, which, as you know, is an area that's been particularly affected by this, which is an early compensation system, and which would provide the victims of poor medical practice or unfortunate medical practice in obstetrical and gynecological cases with immediate full compensation for all medical expenses and economic losses and lost earning capacity.
Mm-hmm.
But no more, but would get those benefits to them quickly and without, for the most part, much in the way of legal fees, so that everything that was paid to them would come quickly, would fully reimburse them for life, and would do so with a minimum of overhead. Now, we're going to try that out in the obstetrical area because that's one that obviously has been very seriously affected by this, but we are going to do it on a pilot basis because we don't know at this point just how well it will work. My sense is that that would be a much better system than what we have, but I want to test it out a little bit.
Sounds like a good idea. Let me ask you, does the legislature seem willing to go along?
We'll see. I just submitted the package. It's taken a number of months of very intensive work to put it together. As I said at the outset, it's probably more comprehensive than anything that's proposed anywhere in the country.
Governor, how are you getting along with the legislature, particularly the new leadership in the lower house?
We've got the best legislative environment here in the State House we've had in years and years, and although we'll differ from time to time on certain details, I can't say enough about this legislature and its leadership. They've been terrific. They've been supportive. They've been very hardworking, and this should be a very good legislative year for us.
Who do you think is going to run against you in the election?
I don't know, Alan. I don't know, but I know I'm going to have opposition, and given what happened to me in 1978, I'm going to be taking it very, very seriously.
Do you see the former governor, your predecessor, running against you?
He might. That's a decision he and and now that he's become a Republican, the Republican Party has to make, but he might be a candidate. There are certainly others that are interested.
Do you think he loses by going from the Democratic to the Republican Party? The people he left hate him?
I'm not sure. You know, if he's more comfortable as a Republican, then he ought to be there. I find no fault with that. I think he's made a... obviously, I disagree with him, and he with me, on a whole range of issues, and given what we've been able to do here in the past 3 years to build a very healthy state and a very strong state, I'm not quite sure how he can seriously suggest that the kind of thing we're seeing in Washington with $200 billion deficits and serious trade problems and these kinds of things is a prescription for us. But the judgment as to what party you happen to be in is one that every individual has to make for himself or herself, and he's made it.
AIDS, Governor. In this state, there is no bigger news than acquired immune deficiency syndrome. Governor Cuomo has seen this as a statewide emergency. He's talked about closing down some of the bathhouses where certain homosexual liaisons go on. I wonder what you're doing over there.
We're doing a lot, Alan. I set up a task force on AIDS way back in 1983, and we, in fact, are one of the few states in the country, New York may be another, which is actually funding research here in Massachusetts on AIDS. And some of the most interesting and most important research is being done in the country is taking place with state funds, not just federal funds here in Massachusetts. We have also, this past year, appropriated a substantial amount of money for support for AIDS victims, for assistance to them, both medical and counseling. I don't have to tell you how tragic this is and how important it is to try to provide support for them and their families, and we're doing that. And we are also looking at other ways that we can be helpful. Now, obviously, everybody hopes that there's going to be a breakthrough on the research side. I don't know what this announcement, which was made recently in Paris, is all about, and some of our doctors here have been somewhat skeptical of it, but if somebody somewhere is making real progress on this, then I think we'll all stand up and applaud.
Massachusetts Governor Michael Dukakis. Well, as usual, we come to that segment of the show when I sit down with Bill Gralty to discuss what we've heard. Bill, what'd you think of that interview?
Well, I thought it was vintage Michael Dukakis. He is a quite different personality and character than Governor Mario Cuomo, who some are more familiar with. But it, having covered him for a while in Massachusetts, it really is, that's the way that Michael Dukakis goes about things. You don't notice a lot of flash and glitz to him, but that's his style.
Bill, has it been your impression that the guy has a sense of humor?
I think he does, but it manifests itself in different ways. It's very subtle, and I think he is more of a humorous person in a small gathering rather than before a large crowd or in an individual one-on-one interview.
It would appear that he has a fairly direct approach to how to solve problems, where we would see a Cuomo, for example, every once in a while bait a legislative leader, and you'd lead him, give him a leading question, and he would talk about, well, they would have to see what would come up in the next elections. Dukakis is much more inclined to play it safe and to say, well, this is the best legislative leadership that we've ever had. I can remember a previous interview with the last speaker. He said much of the same thing.
On the other hand, you have to realize that Dukakis is a Democrat. Massachusetts is overwhelmingly Democratic. The state Senate over there is overwhelmingly Democratic, and so is the state House. It's not quite the situation that we have here in New York.
Well, yes and no. Let me argue that with you for a moment. I can remember on a few occasions in which the governor has given a dig both to the speaker and to the minority leader of his own party in the Senate, Fred Orenstein. I can remember one example on the Capitol Connection, which he talked at some length about how he had gone to campaign for Nancy Lorraine Hoffman, a state senator who was, quote, supposed to lose. And he smiled as he said it up there in Syracuse, indicating that he had helped elect her while Fred Orenstein had not really helped elect somebody of his own party there, so that he's not above twitting them. And I don't think it really means anything other than his sense of let's have a little fun here.
Speaking of elections, I'm interested in your assessment. You obviously have ideas on what Mario Cuomo might be doing in the future politically. What do you think Michael Dukakis might be aiming for?
Well, it is clear that if Mario Cuomo is going to be the presidential candidate from this area of the country, if
Dukakis
that happens,
couldn't be.
Dukakis will not be the vice presidential right. candidate. However, if Mario Cuomo is not the presidential candidate, then it seems to me that it's absolutely clear that Michael Dukakis is a very attractive potential vice presidential nominee. And of course, he wasn't at all willing to engage in banter about that possibility. But we know the last time around that there was some consideration of Dukakis as a possibility in that spot. After all, he's handsome, bright, articulate, well married into a musical family, with the, which certainly our listeners in the Berkshires are aware of. So I think he's exactly the kind of person who would add a great dimension to a ticket. However, if Cuomo is going to be the presidential candidate, I think we could pretty well knock that one out.
Mm-hmm. Let me just finally change subjects a little bit on you and ask what you think people ought to be looking for in this off-year election come next Tuesday. Any trends that you might have your eye on?
Well, to tell you the truth, I really don't. I think
there
that
isn't
it's
too much
fairly,
to get excited
yeah,
about.
Yeah, I think it's a fairly boring election. I hesitate to say that because I'm always down on people who don't go out to exercise the franchise, particularly in New York State. One of the things that I'm looking at are some subtle clues in terms of the propositions on the ballot as to whether or not people are happier, because people tend to vote against these things, and they're not significant. One of them is the JDA, which we've been talking about, the Job Development Authority. Another one would allow the state courts to interpret material for the federal courts. Another would bring the tax code into line, match up the federal and the state tax code. So in an unpopular year, you get a lot of people pressing the no button just to be able to show their disapproval. I suspect that that is not going to really happen here. And my feeling is that we're going to see a fairly low turnout in this election.
Safe bet of the year that Edward I. Koch will be mayor of New York City for the next 4 years?
I, of course, have lost money betting on Koch as a sure thing before, but my bet is that he can't lose down there. Thanks, Bill. That's our show for this week. Join us again next week for another look at state government and politics. Please address comments and questions to us at WAMC Box 13000, Albany, New York. Bill Guralty edits and produces this program. Leslie Brokaw is associate editor. We had help this week from Bryn Quell. I'm Alan Shartok.
The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC News. Alan Shartok is executive producer. This program is made possible with funds provided by the State University of New York College at New Paltz.